The calendar says it's summer. The clock says it's time here on WWNO to focus on home. An occasional break from the stultifying subtropical summer of home, however, can be welcome. So we'll attempt to provide that orally and enologically in the next half hour on All Things New Orleans. A jolly welcome to you. I'm Jack Hopke. We have a story for you today. We have some new local music for you today, and we have a visit from a WWNO alum. First, though, something else you may want to consider for your pet these warm days besides water and shade. Although the practice of traditional Chinese acupuncture dates back thousands of years, its adaptation in Western culture is relatively new, and while your family you yourself, perhaps, I have received treatment in the past with acupuncture, you'll have to second guess who's likely to get it in the future. Sharon Litwin brings us this profile on this week's Notes from New Orleans.
Sitting on pins and needles waiting for the vet to help your beloved pet takes on new meaning these days, at least in some vets' offices. There, it's not the owners dealing with pins and needles, it's the animals. For the use of acupuncture is becoming an increasing part of a treatment regimen in a number of local vets' offices. It's taken a while to prove itself, but more and more animal acupuncture appears to be slowly winning over skilled veterinarians, ranging from those who have been merely leery about this ancient Chinese approach to treatment to those who are outright derisive.
I was a big skeptic. I thought it was a bunch of voodoo, and the veterinarians that I was exposed to before vet school, during vet school, we never even talked about acupuncture as a treatment option. And I had a client of mine who had a dog who could not get up anymore. We did all the pain medication, the supplements, and I knew there was nothing else I could do for her. And there was an acupuncturist that was 3 hours away. And I told my client, and I said, if you want to waste your money, I honestly said this, you can drive 3 hours away, go to see this doctor and get some acupuncture. That's the only other option besides euthanasia.
That's Dr. Cynthia Benbow, a Metairie girl, graduate of Dominican High School and LSU School of Veterinary Medicine, who went off to Tennessee to practice for a few years before returning to New Orleans. A self-described Mardi Gras lover, she was Queen of Endymion in 1993, she is first and always a scientist.
So I didn't talk to her for about a month, and I gave her a call and kind of left it open and said, you know, I was just calling to check on you because I was for sure that they put this dog to sleep at the clinic. And she told me, you know, Fluffy's doing fantastic, getting up, walking around. And I was like, you're kidding me. I called Dr. Kalsa, who was the acupuncturist in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I said, what were in these needles? What did you do? And how did you do it? And she's like, no, it's just acupuncture. So that was my first kind of eye opener that maybe this stuff works.
So she decided to take a course in animal acupuncture offered at the University of Colorado Veterinary School to at least try to understand how this very different Eastern approach to treatment works.
Even the first 3 days in class, I was the pain in the butt raising my hand saying, well, what about this? And how does that little needle do that? And by day three, it was like a light bulb went off that your nervous system controls everything. And if you can stimulate your nervous system at certain locations, that you should be able to make your body react, whether it's to change a hormone level or to how you perceive pain or relax a muscle. It just all of a sudden hit me. And so, and I was, they joke about it now, I really was the biggest pain in the butt. And now I'm the biggest promoter. Because once you see it work, and you were a skeptic before, you're like, this is amazing.
So now that she's certified and has been for several years, when and why does she use acupuncture?
Mainly, I use it for pain and arthritis because we have a lot of geriatric animals. They're living longer, and we'll usually see animals that have come to us that are on all the pain medications and supplements, and there's nothing else that they can do, and they're not able to get up anymore. And so they'll see us at that point, and then we'll do acupuncture to help them get up and have better mobility. We'd like to see them before it gets to that point because in Chinese medicine, you use acupuncture as a preventative, not as a treatment. And so it does work better the sooner you, you know, catch a problem.
It's been years since I had any pets, mostly cats and dogs, although there was a period where I had to coexist with a couple of guinea pigs and a rabbit who ate my plants. I kind of forget people actually like birds and snakes and other animals.
I do acupuncture on not only small animals, but exotic horses. The birds and the exotic pocket pets respond better than the domestic animals. And I think it's because they're more in tune with their environment. And I think the wilder the animal is, the more they're going to get out of the acupuncture session. For instance, we have a rehabilitator that has squirrels that needs to have their teeth trimmed. And usually you have to sedate them or put them under anesthesia to trim them. And you can put a couple of needles in and the squirrel will fall asleep right there. And you can trim the teeth and you pull the needles out and they'll wake right up.
To read more about animal acupuncture, go to wwno.org or nolavie.com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Litwin.
Sharon Litwin's Notes from New Orleans is brought to you in partnership with NOLA-V and is made possible with the assistance of the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. And you're listening to All Things New Orleans here on WWNO. I'm Jack Hopke. Here's another broadcast veteran, not veterinarian, whose activities serve our part of the world and who has an attractive proposition for a summer eve's getaway right here in our own town.
Seems like old home week here at WWNO. A woman who was at this station for three times what my current tenure is, who is a retired French professor also at UNO, has come to visit us today in another capacity that we want to talk about. She is Jean Cranmer. Welcome back.
Well, thanks a lot, Jack. It's great to be back.
You started in 1975.
Yes. Over 30 years bringing French broadcasting to the greater New Orleans area.
And good stuff it was, too. Now we're bringing some French wines on the 29th, but we're going to talk about that. But first, let's talk about your current capacity. You serve as a volunteer with the French American Chamber of Commerce of the Gulf Coast. You're the secretary. What do you do?
Well, as secretaries, I take minutes a lot, and we tend to have a lot of meetings. So I do a lot of doing that.
Well, you have a lot of members, don't you?
We have a fair amount of members. We'd like to have more members.
Besides taking minutes, I heard you mention that as a retiree, you seem to get the call to serve on committees.
Yes, that's true. And I'm very happy to do it. I have been part of the French American Chamber of Commerce ever since its inception 25 years ago. So it's always been part of what I was about when I wasn't teaching or doing administrative work or whatever. And so since I retired, I've been able to take a little bit more active role in my function as secretary, but also help our executive director, Loretta Krasno, with different projects that we have throughout the year.
How long has this organization been French American Chamber of Commerce of the Gulf Coast?
Not very long. It's been about 2 years, I think.
I see. And what membership does that encompass?
Well, it encompasses Louisiana, the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, and Alabama. And we kind of have our eyes on Southern Florida as well.
Southern Florida?
Not the Gulf Coast of Florida, excuse me.
Right.
But I'm not sure about that just yet. But this is actually our 25th year. We're celebrating our silver anniversary this year and making a big to-do about it. Every time we have an event or an activity, we like to point that out, that we've been around for 25 years and enjoying that. And as you pointed out, we started off as a Chamber of Commerce, French American Chamber of Commerce of New Orleans, and then it was Louisiana, and then we sort of got involved in Mississippi and Alabama. For all the things that we have in common along the Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. And so it's been great. We have a dynamic team. Our president, Eric Bellin, took over last year from our former president, who unfortunately we lost last year, Don Hoffman, who founded the organization 25 years ago.
I think most people know generally what a Chamber of Commerce does. You're the French-American Chamber of Commerce, right?
Well, we do what Chambers of Commerce do, mm-hmm. and that is to say we facilitate and promote and develop trade and commerce in our area. For us, of course, that area is the Gulf Coast and France. What we do is try to, like other chambers of commerce, put people together through our membership, through our activities, try to introduce people to each other, give them opportunities to meet each other, to find out what other businesses are going on, how they might form partnerships or see opportunities to create a business. We partner with chambers of commerce in France. Particularly right now, we have a pretty active partnership going on with the Chamber of Commerce in Toulouse, the gentleman who's the president of that, trying to work on aerospace and biotechnical issues that we have in common with that area of France.
To the 29th of the month.
Yes, a wonderful day. I want everyone to put this immediately in their calendars, June 29th, 2013. That is the date this year for one of the French American Chamber's signature events, the Summer Wine Festival. We have two such events during the year, the Summer Wine Festival and then our Beaujolais in November. This year's theme for the Summer Wine Festival is Summer in Provence. And so we are having a big party featuring some of the wines of Provence, which are very well known, the Provençal rosés. And
absolutely. There you go.
And then some of the other Côte de Rhône and Vaucluse area wines. There are other wines from other regions, but also other spirits and even some French beer, Cronenberg, and different libations for everybody, something for everybody to enjoy, non-alcoholic things as well.
Kronenbourg has always been one of my favorite brews, despite the fact that it came, or probably still comes, in an 11-ounce bottle.
Well, you would know more about that than I, Jack Hopke. I don't really know, but I'll take your word for it. Anyway, and there's lots of food. As you can imagine, we have some wonderful chefs, restaurants.
Now, I think it would be, given its timing on the 29th, 2 weeks away from Bastille Day and a few days away from the 4th of July, quite appropriate to come in red, white, and blue, wouldn't you think?
Oh, very much so. In fact, on our invitation, which you can get by Googling.
Pretend I didn't see that.
FACC-GC.com, and you'll see right on our homepage a little poster and a place to purchase tickets. But on the invitation, it says, when in doubt, wear red, white, and blue. And you're absolutely right, because we have positioned the Summer Wine Festival to kind of kick off 2 weeks of Franco-American celebration. Because obviously, as a French-American chamber, that's what we celebrate, those long-standing connections that are historical and cultural, but also commercial between France and this region of the world.
We're talking about the Summer Wine Festival.
It's a great time. It's a great party. It's a wonderful venue. And lots, as I said, lots of good things to eat and drink and people to meet and just passer un bon temps. So venez nombreux. Come one, come all.
Merci to Jean Cranmer, who came to visit with us today from the French American Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you.
The site for information about the organization and the Summer Wine Festival is facc-gc.com. Listening to a little bit of music that I played on my Saturday Night Jazz show this past week, and I thought you might like to hear some too. And know that three of our favorite local guys have a new album out. It's called Soul Understanding. They're very talented musicians, very popular, play in a variety of different venues and contexts. Joe Crown, Walter Wolfman Washington, and Russell Batiste Jr. Soul Understanding. Let's get some for a little while. Soul Understanding. Pretty darn irresistible stuff. Soul Understanding is a brand new CD just out by three of our favorite local musicians here. Joe Crown, Walter Wolfman Washington, Russell Batiste Jr. on the drums. I'm Jack Hopke. Glad you joined us for All Things New Orleans here at WWNO. Now we turn to another story told at the local event, Bring Your Own. Bring Your Own is a live storytelling pop-up series that takes place in living rooms, backyards, and other intimate spaces within our community. Each month, seven storytellers have 7 minutes to respond to a theme. And what you're about to hear was told live, unscripted, and true to the teller. The theme of the evening when this story was told was leftovers. And native New Orleanian Elizabeth Gross tells of a messy roommate situation and a mystery that was ultimately sniffed out.
I had three roommates.
Marge!
In Brooklyn, in the last place where I lived. And essentially, one of the rooms was always posted on Craigslist. And I had convinced a friend of mine to take the room that kept rotating. And this was the first time in my life that I had convinced somebody who knew me to live with me. And so I was really excited. And I didn't know my friend Lindsay that well at that time, but I was excited to get to know her better. And at that point, I'd been in the place for a while. I felt comfortable there. The other roommates were named Tim and Michelle. And Tim was the kind of guy who was really quiet and so laid back that, like, for example, he didn't even notice when there was a huge ant infestation in our house that was originating from his mattress on the floor. And, like, he was the last to notice. He just didn't care. So you imagine he wasn't so great at like, keeping up the household. And Michelle wasn't either. She was, we eventually became really close, but her obliviousness to other people's realities was just unparalleled in my experience. She would meet somebody for the first time, and by the end of the conversation, she would rope them into, like, people like us, you know, for people like us, on any topic. And she wouldn't realize the whole time that she was the only one talking. So she also wasn't as attentive to the house as I was really the only one there until my friend Lindsay came. And so I was excited also because I felt like I associated Lindsay with this group of friends that I had who were kind of activist-y in a way that I wasn't, but kind of wanted to be next to people who cared about things like Palestine and queerness and recycling. And to me, those are all kind of the same because I'm not an activist. So I was really excited to have her there, and she'd been there a little while, and then I think I was alone when I first encountered the leftovers in the refrigerator, which had clearly been there for some time, and no one would claim them. You know, I tried to get a hold of everybody. It was like, is this your food? I was afraid to look inside because I found it just deep in there, and I didn't even know how many roommates back it could have been. And it was so scary, honestly. I couldn't face it. In the meantime, Lindsay hadn't been around much, actually, because it was the first fall of the Occupy movement, and she was between jobs and spending a lot of time there on all kinds of different panels, bringing home interesting news. And she'd actually been volunteering for that period, lending her support, listening to the stories of a victim of sexual assault at the Occupy movement. This horrific thing happened, and she stepped in, and she was by this person's side this whole time while they were in the hospital. And so she wasn't around that much for the leftover drama. She obviously was dealing with the bigger issues. So, you know, I let a day go by, then obviously I had to deal with this thing. I scoured it like I've never scoured anything before. Even the actual plastic was gross. Somehow it was bumpy. It was cloudy. I don't know what happened to it or where it came from. But I like covered the smell. I took the trash out right away. I covered the smell by making curry. And then I had leftovers and I had this clean Tupperware. And I like put my whole head in to make sure that it still didn't smell, and it didn't smell. So I used it and I put it in the fridge. And then, so the next day I get home from work hungry for curry and it's gone. It was gone. And again, I asked my roommates, nobody would give me any information. And of course I'm suspecting either Tim or Michelle, who don't notice anything. Michelle, who will pour cereal into the bowl and miss, and pour the milk in the bowl and miss, and then still not notice that both things are on the counter. So I look everywhere, and then I did find it in the trash, and it was like right on top, and it was right side up, like it was presented there. So eventually it turns out, you probably already figured out, it was Lindsay who threw it away, thinking, I'm coming home, I'm doing a good deed, somebody has got to take care of these leftovers. And not even thinking, because she's been so in this other world of pain and trauma and living through that with this other person, this complete stranger to her, that it just was totally out of her mind. And then the thing that really stopped her and made her take a minute and take care of herself came out after I discovered that she had thrown away my leftovers, because she thought it was so funny. She looked like a dinosaur, like with her head coming back, just paralyzed with laughter. And like in that kind of hysteria, this other flow of emotions finally came out, and she told me like about what she had been doing, even though she was supposed to keep it secret. And we ended up being a lot closer in the end.
Storyteller Elizabeth Gross, I beg your pardon, she's a teacher at the Bard Early College Program. She's a writer and an active member of the Friends of Music organization. Bring Your Own is a production of Liam Daniel Pierce, Lane Kaplan Levinson, and Nina Feldman, and you can find that and other BYO stories on WWNO.org or bringyourownstories.com. And that talk about getting closer is our closer for today. This program is a production of WWNO News. We invite your comments and content suggestions at jhopke@uno.edu. We archive at wwno.org. I'm Jack Hopke. Next time on the 4th of July week show, we'll match the purple, green, and gold with the red, white, and blue. All colors of and for all people, all American, all things New Orleans.